Hello, beloved listeners. This is Adrienne, writer of stories and songs, emergent strategist and pleasure activist, living in the land of the Shikori, Skarure, Tuscarora, Eno, and Lumbee peoples. And this is How to Survive the End of the World, our podcast about learning from apocalypse with grace, rigor, and curiosity. When I say our, of course, I'm including my co-host and sister, Autumn, who is currently on sabbatical, doing a lot of Aikido. In her absence, and in honor of my book, Fables and Spells, I'm going full witch this season and having conversations with some of my favorite witches and teachers. And I'll also read you little bits and pieces from the book. Now, what I mean by witch is people who work with elements of the natural world, including our human nature, to generate more possibilities. Witching is engaging the essential natural world with magic, healing, or supernatural intentions. Some names for what I'm including in this work: shamanism, sorcery, seeing, healing, herbalism, midwifery, doula labor, reiki, root work, conjuring, rituals and spell casting, astrology and divination, sound baths, altar building, song channeling, all these ways of building a direct relationship with the realm of the ancestors and the spirit and the holy and the ethereal and us. I want to remind folks that we don't have any sponsors for this, there's no big funders behind it, and we don't do any ads. So all of our support comes from y'all. So if you are a regular listener, or if you're a new listener, and you want to support this work, slide on over to patreon.com/endoftheworldshow and become part of our patron crew. You will get very intimate and often inappropriate Ask Us Anything content if you do that. Okay. Now, my guest today, I'm so excited. Immediately, I see this person and my heart melts and it goes wide and open. And I just feel like y'all are going to get such good medicine. So I'm bringing on Adaku Uta, who is the founder of Harriet's Apothecary, who is part of the Black Organizing for Leadership and Dignity family, who is a reproductive justice warrior, and who is coming off of a long, beautiful, thick, rich international sabbatical. Adaku, I am so freaking excited that you're here. I can't believe it.
Hi, boo. I love you.
I love you so much.
Heart is definitely melting right now, too. So
it's swoony.
It's swoony.
It's pretty swoony. How are you right now today?
Besides the heart melts and explosion, tenderness. You know, the full moon is tomorrow, and I have this moment every month where I'm like, why am I feeling tender all of a sudden? And
like, I couldn't be the sky.
Period came on today, and so I'm just feeling the rising tide of waters, both grief and like the joy that makes you laugh. I just moved, which is giving me a lot of joy right now. You got to see a little glimpse of my space a moment ago, and
gorgeous.
I am appreciating connecting with you because I miss you.
Miss you too.
And these moments are precious. How are you? How are you doing?
I'm really, you know, I had this moment just now of celebration with my team because I was like, my day is so full today. And every single thing is something that I'm like so excited to do. Yes. Right. Yeah. And that's how my life has been feeling a lot lately. Last night I got to be in conversation with N.K. Jemisin and Nalo Hopkinson and like a whole relaxed conversation on writing.
And relaxed, I mean, being
like,
the key word.
Relaxed. I was relaxed. I was like, yes, like, these are people I look up to, and I'm also like in the field now, putting my foot in the door.
Yeah,
fiction,
you got some things to say.
So it was like, I don't know, just these moments that are like, it's better than an award or something. It's just like, I'm in this conversation, you know? And one day I dreamt of this, and now here I am sitting here and
living it,
you know? And last week we got to put up the ritual, again, so the songs are still thrumming through my body, and then I'm like turning and facing some healing work that is ready to be looked at, in terms of how I relate to food and my emotions and my body. And so all of that's feeling, you know, it's sort of like, okay, like, what is, I keep being like one foot in front of the other and then celebrate when you can.
Yeah.
And then one foot in front of the other and celebrate when you can. And that feels like my, it's working as an approach for me. And
I
being here with you is like, I always love talking to people who are in this, the wake of sabbatical or the presence of sabbatical. I feel like it deepens my breath and slows me down. And it just reminds me like, oh, right. You also know that state, it exists in you too. So maybe before we even get into, I have a set of like witchy questions for you, but maybe before we get into all that, I would love to just hear briefly, like, what is the spell that sabbatical cast on your life?
Thank you. I'm also, before I start, I just want to celebrate your living into your dreams. I mean, that is a, it's just a, it's a reflection of just good witch work and courageous work to turn and face your own longings and desires, which to me was one of the medicines of sabbatical is actually there's enough room for me to, there's actually more room for me to exist in this world. And I live a very abundant life like you that I deeply love and respect and felt very stretched with less boundaries than I wanted to have. And just a deep fatigue and burnout on the beginning, on the dawn of my sabbatical. Through it, I felt more of the earth holding me, more of my community holding me in ways that I had forgotten. And there's more to life beyond how I had cultivated my own existence. Like, it was so focused on a lot of giving towards building power and healing at huge scales, you know, from cellular to generational. And it was big work, you know, big work that asked a lot out of me and stretched me and made me really tired. And it also, from that place of tiredness, I forgot how abundant life is. I'm like, oh, there's more.
There's actually more.
There's actually more.
That doesn't require more.
Right. We can actually reconfigure in some ways, like Tetris, like we can reconfigure how our life looks to re-enter alive in different ways. So feeling that, I made a commitment to dance again more deeply. So I was in 9 countries, and I danced everywhere that I was. So from studios to forests to middle of rivers, and it was a gift of reconnection to my core and the gravity of my own voice, because it's so easy as someone who's, you know, an organizer, a healer, a teacher. My identity can get so shaped by other people's needs and expectations. And
that's right.
While I have my own compass and sense of self, there's some muddling that, you know, that tends to happen. And so it felt good to clarify the distinctions of my life and others and where and how I want to lead from.
So. I love that. And I really love, you know, it's so interesting. Like, normally I would say dancer is the first thing in any bio that I would make for you. and so, yeah, I'm really glad that you brought that aspect of yourself into the view of the listeners here. I'm like, Adaku moves like fire.
And I'm trying to bring in more of that water, too.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
You got water.
I do. The water, the earth,
and
the
air. But I was like,
air.
It's like fire water that's not steam.
Yeah, or wildfire that's burning out everything, including myself.
Yeah, you're like, oh, grounded, oceanic fire. Yeah.
That's it.
Okay, well, you know, I have to keep in mind doing this podcast that I'm doing a podcast because
my mind is in me.
I was like, I just want to talk to you about all these things.
All the threads.
I want to talk about, yeah, every single thread that exists. And I'm really excited because I think there's something really particular that you have to offer our listeners in terms of the way you have approached this witching work. So I'm going to be disciplined. but yeah, we do need a date, a phone date.
We do.
So I'm using the terminology of witch as I've defined it here. But I always like to just start off by asking people, how do you identify the work that you do?
Yeah, that's great. Mm-hmm. I also use the word witch sometimes. Sometimes I use the word obanje, which is an Igbo word to describe witch. And sometimes I just use my name. For me, the word is less important than how I'm practicing, what I'm practicing with the powers that I have. You know, what are the principles? What are the core roots of the magic that I'm holding? And I really see this work, this witchery, as an expression of my love, curiosity, and awe for life and its many expressions, you know, beyond what we know on a human scale. And so I feel connected and embrace and unapologetically call myself a witch, and claim that word. And more than anything, who I am, I want that to move from what I value around how I wield power in order to create, connect, and build more possibilities, whether it's on a cellular to a generational planetary scale. Mm-hmm. When I think about the kind of witch that I am, I see myself as a sensuous witch that gives and receives a lot of power through deepened awareness and connection to the sensory aspects of life. So from the taste of joy to the texture of despair and the rhythm of earth seasons and cycles of the moon and the sounds of drumming and humming and feet on land and, you know, receiving the touch of a loved one or ancestor. And to me, the senses in particular are such a bridge to multiple ways of knowing and listening to various life forms and multiple realms. And, you know, I was sitting in a meditation practice that was more than an hour long yesterday. Mm-hmm. And that depth of presence and length of time, I could feel more messages from ancestors than I usually would if I was just sitting for 2 minutes, you know?
Yeah.
And I also see, you know, the witchery work that I do is part of this lineage of sacred commitments of breaking generational curses and organizing to build power, particularly with Black people. I, like you, you know, we're one of many folks who draw on spiritual traditions and practices for strength, for resilience, for vision, for alignment against a lot of these colonialist and fascist forces that we're up against right now. And I'm grateful that my witch work, obanje work, sacred work is, you know, part of the base building that we need right now. You know, it's building up the cadre of partnerships at scale that's between humans and plants and with mushrooms and with the galaxies, which feels really important, you know. There's so many ways to practice witchery and magic, and I'm grateful for more and more I'm learning just the need to scale up and deepen in relational ways of being across ecosystems that include migrant folks from Nigeria to trans folks from the South to the wisdom of, you know, ancestors from the Underground Railroad to mushrooms that are teaching us about how to trust one another, you know. Mm-hmm.
You know, almost, you know, everything you're saying is making my tail wag.
Come on, tail.
I'm just like, oh, I forgot how, you know, sometimes you'll have like, oh, I know that I love this person. And then when you get to be around that person, you, I'm like, I forget how easily you slip into poetry, which I love, and how easily you slip into fractal understandings. You know, I feel like you are always attending to the very small and the very profoundly large. And one of my thoughts of what it means to be around you is like, I'm going to slow down now. And there's delight here, you know? And even if it's just, you know, like hugging you is always like, oh, wait, don't rush away from this. Like, soften into it and stay. And
savor.
That feels like a magic, you know, presencing that you do that, you know, it feels like everything now that you've been practicing is like, oh, yeah, that allows you to deepen into the being aspect of witchiness, right? Which is just like how I be is a shape-shifting energetic invitation to people.
Yeah.
So, you know, I know that there's the particular story of you partnering with Harriet Tubman to create Harriet's Apothecary. And I want to ask you to speak on that. But I also want to know, I feel like there's probably a lot of backstory to how you realized you could make such an audacious partnership across time, space, continuums, and spirit. And so I wanted to ask you when you first realized you were drawn to this work. And then, you know, how that led you to Harriet's and beyond.
Thank you for seeing me. I feel very seen by you. I feel very seen and slowed down by you too, and savoring in this. So just wanted to reflect that back. So as you know, I grew up in Festac, Nigeria for the first 12 years of my life. And I was fortunately surrounded by a lot of just conversations and people and ecosystems that would organize their lives beyond human identity and existence. So my mom at the time was a pastor, and she was raised by her grandmother and her chosen family, a lot of who identified as witches or Obanjes. And, you know, they grew up navigating their worlds by exploring how their lives were being shaped by multiple realms. So, you know, talking about which ancestors from other lifetimes were impacting how harvest was growing, to folks who were living double lives through astral projection, or people who were part human and part animal. So these were like normal conversations at the market, at the kitchen table. And some of those conversations and people were pathologized and seen as sinful, and some of them were celebrated. So when I first started getting visits from spirits and ancestors from other realms, it just felt like a neighbor was coming to the house. It was like, oh yeah, what's up? Let's have this conversation. And the powers that I felt really natural to me just felt like another limb on my body. Like, it didn't feel apart from me. It felt a part of me. And my mom in particular, and I'm grateful for this, we've had a complicated relationship our whole lives. And even as a pastor, I would come and tell her like, oh, I had this dream, or this person came to visit me. She didn't try to pray it away. She tried to pray other things away, like my queerness, but she was very...
Like, I'm still praying, honey.
Praying for you. And tell me more, you know, tell me more about what you're hearing and what you're experiencing. So it it normalized those relationships for me, these spiritual relationships for me, these intra-realm relationships for me, and encouraged me to be in practice with them. And so they've grown over time. And the other part that's grown is my ability to be able to have boundaries around who I'm communicating with and what powers I use when and with whom. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I talk a lot about my fire. I'm very proud Aries, Aries sun, Leo rising. Good. And,
and she's going to shine.
I will shine. It's easy for me to give and project the powers that I have. And it's not always needed in that level of a stream. I've had to learn sometimes in hard ways to like titrate or right size mm-hmm. the gifts and the power that I have. So that's been a humbling lesson. And also with the relationships that I have across realms and across lifetimes and across species, like any relationship, it's like, oh, who am I supposed to be in relationship now? What do we have to teach each other? Where do we need to practice boundaries? What's the timing? Maybe this is just for a moment in order to meet a particular political chaos, you know, which happened 2 weeks ago, where we were a couple of us who are doing abortion access work here in Newburgh. We're sitting and talking to folks who had been midwives in our lineages, and we brought them in for that particular moment to help us figure out some blocks that were happening in access. And that was just for a momentary, that was a moment in time. It wasn't like, you're going to be with us throughout the length of this campaign, but this is, or the length of this work, but for this particular moment in time, we need you in this way. Hmm. So I give thanks to that lineage. I give thanks to my mom and her own teachers and her own grandparents in particular, who were also patient with her and also curious with her, so that she was able to extend that to me and make my capacity to exist beyond the humanness of my life.
Yes.
To be honored, you know, to be honored and revered, and also to get to keep practicing up.
I love all that. I just want to say, yes, I love imagining little baby Adaku and like spirits coming and tapping on your shoulder.
Yeah. Mm. Or not, just like busting it. Busting it, like, we need to talk. I'm like, okay.
Listen. You know, part of me is really curious about, and we can go here or not go here. Mm. But because I feel that there is such an overlap between the witchiest parts of me and the queerest parts of me, like the parts of me that exist outside of the kind of controllable, binaried, externally defined spaces.
Yeah.
And so I am curious how you have navigated that aspect of having the same person who was inviting and listening also be someone who was close to part of your magic self. And I know you've done a lot of work there, really beautiful healing work and, you know, building a new generative tissue. Is there anything, you know, just sort of at the tip of your tongue there, about that weaving, that place?
Yeah, that's such a great question. And I would say that, my spiritual practices and spiritual community affirmed that there was actually there's actually more of me to exist in and also more of me to love. And my mom, you know, because of her Christian fundamental upbringing, she was afraid of that kind of freedom, that level of freedom, and often punished me alongside a lot of folks in our church. And it's interesting having conversations with her now, because she eventually left the church and returned to Odinani, which is our Igbo spiritual cosmology that's existed pre-colonial, like hundreds and hundreds of years. Mm-hmm. And it's reunited her with, you know, how expansive the universe is, how expansive spiritual entity and life forms are, and how expansive gender is. And she even apologized. She's like, oh, what I knew back then was so chained by Christian fundamentalism. And it was hard. It was definitely a struggle. It was a struggle growing up to both feel the contradiction of permission and constriction at the same time. And and trying to find home, like trying to find myself in it. And, you know, I would expand and feel more into myself. And I knew I was as queer from the age of 4. Like, it wasn't something that came on later on. I got to express it more boldly later on. But the knowing of my queerness was very strong and innate from an early age. And so it was complicated trying to exist in ways that would keep me safe while also expressing what I was discovering from all of these different spiritual guides about life. You know, it's like, oh, you are 4 and you love different kinds of people, and that's okay. and doing that, like, my first crush was my babysitter, and moving closer towards her and share, you know.
So sweet.
Right, and sharing about that with them and also with my mom, and then at the same time being flogged because of that by her. Ooh. So it was a struggle. It was a struggle, and I'm grateful for the reminders from my spiritual community, the ones outside of the church in particular, who loved up on me, who saw me for who I was, who I am. Yeah, and helped me expand in ways that were safe enough as much as I could in that time on that land. Yeah.
Well, you know, I think about this a lot, that I'm like, everything is actually changing in real time.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, the world that we were born into is so different already from what we live in now. And I'm always trying to not apply what I know now to, you know, my parents or grandparents or others. Mm-hmm. You know, I try to be like, inside of where you lived, you know, these ideas were available. You weren't open to them yet, and maybe that's why I came to you. And also there was something open enough in you to let the magic I needed get to me. So, you know, I'm grateful for you sharing the tenderness and the complexity of all of that. And I'm also really grateful that your small self knew how to get through it and survive it.
Yeah.
I just bow to the wisdom at all the times and places.
Hello, beloved survivors. This is Autumn. I'm emerging briefly from the new home I made for myself in the forest among the gnomes and the fae and magical creatures of all kind, to remind you that if you listen to this show regularly, you might consider making a gift to support our work in 2024. And I'll tell you a little bit about why. Adrienne and I and our producer, Zach, have always felt strongly that we can best protect the content of our show by being listener-supported rather than ad-sponsored. Being financially supported by the people who are most directly impacted by our show means that we can fearlessly move towards the most difficult topics, the most challenging conversations, and the most courageous edges of the time we are living through. From our apocalypse survival episode on the right to arm and defend ourselves, which aired in the midst of the 2020 uprising, to our 2023 ceasefire episode on the genocide being perpetrated on the Palestinian people in Gaza, we have maintained our show as a place to hold out visionary possibility with our eyes trained on liberation for all oppressed peoples. That's because we aren't worried about being dropped or canceled. We know that the people who most need to hear us can and will hear us, and that's because of you. So we want to thank you, all of you, who support our show in all of the myriad ways that you do it. And we want to invite those of you who haven't yet to consider making a sustaining gift via Patreon. In exchange, you do get some sweet, cute merch, plus access to content that we record only for patrons. So you can go to patreon.com/endoftheworldshow to learn more. And if you're wondering if I'm coming back, I'm coming back.
It sounds like there were both formal and informal paths that you were stepping onto. And so I'd love to hear a little bit about that. Like, what feel like the formal lineages that guide the way you work? And I think of this, you know, I think with the apothecary, with your herbalism work, with your path in the realm of Ifa, like, I'm like, what are the formal lineages? And then I also find you to be someone who's always, it feels like always kind of pulling magic from the air. There's also an informality, right? Or a casual, like, yeah, we can do it. We have what we need. And I can whip up a bath. Let me just go outside for a second, you know? So I'd love to hear that, a little bit from you on the formal and informal lineages of your work.
Yeah. So, Odinani, the cosmology that I was just talking about, runs through my family. And even though my mom initially ran away from it because she didn't understand it fully, too, was the church. She came back to it, and Odinani is a cosmology that is closely integrated with just the daily lives of specifically Igbo people in southeastern Nigeria. And it's also integrated in the social and political governance of people, and our frameworks around how we understand the world, relationships between human beings, divinity, and the forces of nature. So my formal education, my formal connection with Odinani didn't start until much later, maybe about 10 years ago. And informally, because, you know, ancestors, they constantly, whether or not we're choosing to pay attention to them or not, are leaving trails, you know, leaving trails of learning for us. So some of those trails for my mom in particular, and my maternal lineage, was through herbalism and plant medicine. So she learned from her grandmother how to work with plants to heal. And her first kind of crash course was during the war, during the Biafran War. So, you know, plants became partners for survival, and then eventually throughout the course of her life, became partners for friendship and belonging. She's super introverted and felt more kinship with plants, and that level of connection also extended to me, as someone who grew up as a chronically ill child. And so we went to the doctor, and we also, my mom also was like harvesting and growing her own medicine. And I learned from a young age to make my own medicine. But bigger than that, it's like, how do we listen with the wisdom of what grows around us, what lives around us, our siblings, to understand more of the conditions facing our people, facing Igbo people, and how can we work with our siblings, plant medicine, to restore, reclaim, and resist in order to build power for our people. So that learning has seeped through our lineage, through me, through my mom, through her parents, her great-grandparents, and I'm grateful for that. And I've, you know, when I came to the U.S., I did different, like, apprenticeships, like, in the U.S. and in Jamaica and IT, and then formally started training up with Odinani, with my mom, actually, about a decade ago. And it's becoming more and more formalized. And it's interesting to use the word formalized, but I guess the way that I see it is like there is, I actually want to unpack that a little bit. I think it's like we have.
I mean, I'm really grateful to unpack it too.
Yeah.
Because I think of it as like there's, I'll tell you the distinction, what I mean,
and then
you tell me what you think of this, because we can scrap it. But for me, there are things that I'm just intuitively drawn to do. A lot of the way my spells work, they just pour through. A lot of the way my rituals work are like, I'm literally moving already to go do the thing before I'm even aware. I'm like, oh, I know what needs to happen, and I need to pull on this element. I just need to burn that thing right now and go bury it in the dirt. I just know to do it. And so I think of those as my intuitive witchy instincts and skills. And I trust them, right?
Yes.
Like I am not, there's no part of me that's interested in like resisting or being like, well, where'd that come from? And you got to ask a different kind of permission for it. I'm like, the permission is coming through my body. The guidance, the direction is coming through my body. And I always have a feeling that it took a lot to get it to me. You know, I'm like, the instruction is coming across realms and barriers that I can't even perceive of. But I know that it came through very clearly that this is what's supposed to happen now. And it's shown up in my facilitation. It's shown up in my leadership. Just today, it was like, you need to say something about homophobia, and that's a spell. It's a little casting. It's a little invitation. So there's that intuitive work. Mm-hmm. And then there's folks that I'm always like, I deeply respect this other thing, which is when people are like, I feel called to something, and then I'm going to go be on a path that takes years to apprentice, to develop. And for me, my doula work happened that way, where it's like, okay, I need to find a teacher. This isn't something that I can just feel from within. There is a technology of bodies that's actually known and sacred, and I need to understand it. And that doesn't mean I need to go to med school to get it or a training program, but I do need a teacher. I need someone who's further along on this path, and that's how I'll understand what to do to meet my intuitive instincts for it.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean is like, you know, there's places where people are like, oh yeah, I've done this path, and now I'm a priestess, you know, inside of a formal tradition. And the other people in my tradition understand what that means about what I can and cannot do or bring into a space. And there's further that I might go on this path, you know?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I resonate with that. I resonate with that and feel into it. And my paths of learning have taken those roads. So having teachers and still having teachers, whether it's with plant medicine or somatics or dance or organizing. I love being a learner. Like I'm someone who is like just has an insatiable appetite for learning the depths of, you know, what are these practices? What are these tools? What are these resources that can reshape our worlds, you know? Mm. And then I think with more practice, like you just mentioned, that our intuition, and I also think streams of communication grows, you know, because there's ways to communicate where you and I can sit down and have a conversation. We can teach each other things. And then I also think that there are ways in which the more time that we spend, whether listening or being in relationship to different species, like I think about like the skull cap plants that grow in my yard right now, or the death cap mushrooms that are down the block by the Underground Railroad. Mm-hmm. If I'm doing an action by those medicines, I will know what to do more now because I've been in relationship with them. So it, you know, that level of knowing of what to do, what ritual baths to create, what spell to cast. Yes, in some ways has come from that training from like a teacher, a mentor. It's and then it's come from the relational work that allows for depthful listening and communication to know what to do, yeah, to build up the intuitive sense. And I'm grateful too for my meditation practice and also the practice of microdosing, like eating, you know, in particular. Having multiple bridges to multiple realms, essentially, that helped to build up this intuitive capacity. Hmm. I think the last thing I'll say is, as an organizer, someone who's been organizing since I was young, you know, the first thing that we start off with is by listening. You know, it's like listening to the conditions of our people, and our bodies and what's happening with them. And that feels like such an essential path of figuring out not only what are the conditions that are impacting our folks, but also building up the forms of resistance that can meet us where we were at, and then build up power.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. You know, the listening has been a big theme amongst the witches this year, and it helps me. It feels very grounding for me, right? That I'm like, there's some times when I'm like, oh, is it enough to listen and to sing the song that I hear, you know, to bring forward what the poem is that I hear? But then when I think of it, the listening that's happening, I'm like, oh yeah, this is how I'm tapping into something greater than myself. Yeah. And then my work is to bring it into the light. And I feel that in what you do as well. So I'd love to ask you, just kind of lay out the smorgasbord of Adaku gifts. What are all the ways that you currently do your witching work? Because I've experienced you as an herbalist. I have received your baths. I have received body work from you. I have felt you in a moment with me tap into other realms in order to bring me wisdom that could help me through a moment. I have felt what felt like your capacity to kind of reach through time and space for messages and for contact. And I feel like that's just touching the surface. I'd love to hear, for you, what are the ways and what feels most current also? Because I'm like, sometimes we pass through witchy areas on our way to the next, you know, I'm like, oh, I might not do that every day anymore. You know, like now I'm like, I'm not an active doula, but doula shows up in everything that I do.
Yeah.
And I needed to formally doula in order to know that.
Right? Yeah.
So, yeah, you know what I mean, I think.
I do know. And thanks again for the seeing. Yeah.
So good to see you.
It's good. And it's good to see you. It's good to see and feel you. Yeah. So my spiritual practices and spiritual embodiment, my witchery really shows up in these multiple roles that I hold in the world, whether it's as an organizer, facilitator, a ritual artist, a healer, and as someone who holds all those roles on like a one-on-one scale to organizational to movement wide. What feels really present for me right now is the like harnessing the ability to be audaciously honest and offering really grounded assessments around what it is that I see around how we're being shaped by so much, like whether it's the internalized messages that we've received from when we're in the womb or throughout our generations to the right-wing fascist playbook that is generations long. And just, bringing a clarity and precision to the assessments of what's happening on these multiple levels and bringing folks together to reconnect with their own sense of power. From a young age, my mom often told me, she's like, you can see people, and it's like people feel themselves with you.
Yes.
And they feel almost to the point where it's like, you're just seeing too much and that feels scary. But there's a comfort with which people undress themselves with me and not from like a, not in a forced way, but like, I see you yeah. and I want to see you. And there are not a lot of spaces where a lot of us feel seen. And I think that can impact the way that we extend our power into the world. And so one of the prayers that I often cast is, may I see clearly. may I see clearly so that whatever power is moving through me, how I'm organizing a space, how I'm leading, how I'm making sure that this plan around getting queer and trans folks in Lagos, Nigeria, access to abortion care and some of the most restrictive conditions, it really comes from a clear sight of who our people are and what they need. And that folks can really tap into what's the power, what's the gifts that they have to transform those conditions together. And doing it from a place that, power is interesting. Power is interesting and complex. In a room or in a community and in an ecosystem, I think part of how power expresses itself through domination is people wanting to be seen. And I think that there are ways to create that sense of seeing and belonging that doesn't erase other bodies. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a big part of what my medicine is right now, and the witchery work that I'm practicing right now. And just supporting folks, including myself, in unlocking beyond what we know of ourselves. In the presence of trauma and oppression, we narrow our attention. We narrow our attention to what is possible and what we know of our own power. So power can become ambivalent, or it's like, it's not something that I have, or it's not something that I can get, but that's not true. There's actually more that we get to have and we get to reclaim. And also, given a lot of the despair and fatigue right now, that is so necessary. Like, our abilities to be able to see beyond, like see the despair and be with it, which is also a part of my own medicine, is like holding the complexity and the kaleidoscope of all of it. It's like I can be with the joy and be with the despair. I can be with the joy and I can be with the chaos, and being grounded as I possibly can to welcome the medicine that comes from those places. Which is, you know, taking my own work as someone who's like gone through, which I think is very common for a lot of folks who are on this path of, you know, depression and anxiety and suicidal ideation, and just like trying to figure out where can I live and move in all of these different realms, and how can I expand enough to hold, the complexity of living, living, yes, you know, living. Literally living. Mm-hmm. So, the last thing that I'll say is mushrooms are amazing.
Baby, they're honey. So amazing.
Yeah. And I've been a student of mushrooms for a really long time, and I've been working with mushroom medicine for a while, and on sabbatical, specifically in Durban, South Africa, I intentionally wasn't trying to do this, but I had a mushroom journey that was heroic, and it created this.
That wasn't the word I was expecting. Or like the top.
It's like the language. I don't know. It's like the language that they use in like the mushroom community, or mushroom psychedelic journeying community, around like the levels of depth that you can go in a mushroom journey. And one of the things that you get to experience inside of that is an ego death, and just like a, the best way that I can describe it in this moment is this dissolving into the mother, like the mother earth. And just a deep palpable felt sense of belonging with this planetary system that we are. And there are ways in which I've connected with that, like working with ancestors, doing astral projection, making medicine with other herbs, and it was on a whole other level. Yes, with right. mushrooms. And it makes a lot of sense, just given they're one of the first species that entered the planet. So they have so much, period. So they have so much wisdom to offer. And I've just like tapped just a very small amount, and there's so much there that I'm excited to explore more of. And then the other thing, and I've shared this with you a little bit before, is dance. So I've been dancing since I was little, but I haven't always felt my body through dance. Mm-hmm. So I've had lots of, you know, contradictory experiences with dance where, similarly with you, like dance in a community, then started dancing in companies, and in some really restrictive companies and studios that just quieted rather than expanded my own voice and power. And so thankfully, through the work that I've been doing through somatics over the years, I've just been reconnecting with my own body too, on a deeper level. So dance is teaching me that there are so many ways to express my own knowing, and in particular, like, connect with the rites of passage of each emotion, because each emotion has a rites of passage through the body, whether it's like what I'm feeling or what other people are feeling, and it gets like connected to me or passed on to me if I'm allowing that to happen. And the consistency consistency of practice, like, well, I really appreciated what you were offering earlier around the fact that we're changing and what we connect with changes too.
Yes.
And every moment of time, every moment of change requires practice. for rootedness, you know, for whatever magic that I'm holding on to in that particular time to actually grow with integrity. And so that what I'm practicing is accountable. It's accountable to the lineage that it comes from. It's accountable to the people that I'm working with and partnering with. And it's also accountable to my body, so that I'm not wielding that power with harm, but, you know, wielding it with integrity.
I love you. I love you. There's so much instruction in between the lines of how you work. And I think that it's one of the things I have been very excited about in this process, is I'm like, when you're talking to witches, it just kind of slips in. You know, the medicine is always slipping in and through. And I think that's part of our survival strategy also, is to loosely offer the wisdom, loosely hold it, and loosely offer it. And so I really appreciate how you're holding and how you're offering your wisdom. I have another question for you, and then I want to read you a little bit from Fables and Spells. And of course, I want to read you the Harriet is a North Star poetry. But the question I have for you is, what witch skills do you wish everyone had in this apocalyptic time? And one of the arenas of this, I think all the time about how you partnered with Harriet Tubman to create Harriet's Apothecary, and how I wish, you know, I feel like in a lot of ways I've partnered with Octavia Butler, with what she left on the pages, all kinds of pages for us, in order to understand more about the world right now. So that feels like a practice, right? That I'm like, find your ancestor and your lineage, partner with them, you know, study them, and you don't have to project anything onto them, right? Just be with what they actually did and they offered. That feels like a practice. But I wonder if there's other practices right now that you're like, oh, I hunger for us to have this capacity at a collective level.
Double tap on the reciprocal relationships with our ancestors, both our blood and chosen.
Yes.
The ones that we know and we don't know. And I would also add to the earth ancestral lineage of the geographic locations that you've been a part of. So every place that you've lived in some way has invited you there and has something to teach you about your own power and the collective power that lives there. Whether, you know, the medicine that grew on your sidewalk as a child in order to, you know, support the enslaved African peoples who were once there, to, you know, waterways that get shifted because of migration patterns. So, check out your hoods.
That's right. Come home.
What are the elements that live there, and what do they have to teach you about the power that's there that you might get to partner with, actually, in order to support liberation for our people in these times. The other thing, and I mentioned this a little bit before, is that, you know, we place a lot of hierarchy and attention on this plane, like this physical plane and this like lifetime, and there's so many more realms that we get to partner with for power, belonging, and connection. So I often look to dreams. I often look to even daydreaming, and like following the direction of like where does my imagination go to when I'm less punitive and controlling with it, but just like adding some freedom and permission to it and seeing where that takes me. I connected to that is listening, which feels so fundamental to me. It's like listening helps us expand beyond what we know is true, and not listening just to gather facts, but listening to really cultivate relationships. Like, we will not win, we will not build power, we will not extend into generations if we are not if we're not listening to ourselves and our people. And so whatever tools, whatever practices that can sustain your attention, because we, you know, you said this lots of times, is like we're in a crisis of attention where our attention is organized towards other people's demands and definitions of what is possible. So how might we practice listening for what's possible beyond our own understanding and our own what we've tried.
Yeah.
The last thing that I'll say is, for now, there's so much I could say. Practice partners. Like, I think I feel I just would not be here without folks to just ask questions with, try things on, build political campaigns with. Like, this is relational work that we're doing, mm-hmm. that requires partnership, partnership that can practice fail together, try again and yes. see what unfolds. So I get excited about that. And the age and time that we live in, primarily because of racialized capitalism, moves things so quickly that we, and I even include myself with this too sometimes, is I can rush the pace of my own transformation. And I actually need to
thinking I could whistle. It did not come out, but I felt a whistle in my heart. I used to know how to whistle. Anyway, I'll deal with that later.
Yeah. I used to tell them, like, what are you doing with your lips again?
And I'm like, well, okay, there's a little something there.
Something's going on. But, I'm trying to, and it comes from a place of good intention. It's like, I want to grow. Right. I want to heal. Right. And I want to be even more powerful than I am right now.
I'm just laughing because I'm like, I want to grow. And I've carved out this particular timeline.
Right, exactly. So here's the timeline.
I have plans on where I need to be by when. And so if y'all can just all align my healing process. Right. Thing. Yep. I recognize and I see you, goddess.
Right, exactly. So, there's that desire, and transformation takes time. Integration takes time. And I think we have to respect that. We need to respect the time that it takes to change, and transform into more of who we need to be. And actually rushing depletes us, and it depletes the integrity of what we're trying to grow into. So
beautiful.
I learned the hard way, and I'm still learning and grateful for who paces me, including folks like yourself. Mm-hmm. And savor in it. Savor in the journey. as much as we can.
You know, when I think about our journey of healing and the...
Yeah.
I always think about Malkia saying we want to create echo chambers of transformation. And I feel like you are someone in who I feel that the echoes. And I always imagine us laid out on that beach in Miami.
I know.
Dreaming our lives. And I feel like, you know, whenever I talk to you, I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
You're doing the thing that you said you were going to do.
We're living into it.
We're living into it.
We're living it.
Yeah. It just feels like that's this little portal that, you know, if I remember correctly, it was like lunch break from our meeting or something. I'm like, there's just no way we could have known the resonance of that moment or conversation. But it stands out to me as I listen to you now that I'm like, good job, Adaku.
Good job. And maybe in some ways our bodies knew and were calling us into this future too.
Absolutely.
You know,
like, can you just lay down? That's what you need to do.
Right.
Try that.
Right.
Try that.
Good job to you too, boo.
Yeah. Like, I'm just like, oh yeah, let's celebrate. We've come a long way during a very immense time.
Right. Where
it can feel like you're slipping backwards all the time, but actually huge leaps and bounds are happening. So I want to read you just this last part of this piece, Harriet is a North Star. You know, you're part of what turns my attention to Harriet in a deeper way, and thinking about her as a human being, you know, thinking about her as someone who had disabilities and had love and, you know, had people who didn't want to follow her and knew how to, you know, who sang as a strategy to direct people. So I have this piece, which is about her. And I'm just going to read the last part. So we have to be willing to pull a revolver on those who, in their fear, would risk the lives and well-being of everyone else. We have to be willing to say we will complete this journey to freedom one way or another. We have to give our lives to the future that comes through in our dreams, to talk directly to God, to listen directly, to be so much more than we're told we should be, to be shocking, to be myth leaving legacy. 8 years, so many trips in the long winter nights, so many people, directly and indirectly. Train ever on the tracks, no lost passengers, my people are free. Harriet, guide me today. Teach me generosity, adaptation, and bravery. Teach me the beauty of each small cluster moving north, moving together, moving towards liberation. Teach me rigor. Teach me humility. Teach me to listen to the divine directly, to let myself be well used. Remind me that you did the work in hiding, in danger, hoping no one would know your name. Teach me to sing when the way is clear. Teach me to make freedom more compelling than the slow death of slavery. Teach me to work alone and in interdependence that requires astonishing trust. Break my heart in order to keep me moving. Keep my mind set on freedom. Remind me that all the time, and even now, my people are free. Thank you, Harriet.
Yes.
And thank you, Adaku. I'm so proud to know you.
Yes.
So proud to grow with you. All right, I'm going to write the Adaku song later, but I love you.
I was dancing. I was like, wait a second.
There's a here. Thank you for your miraculous time and just joining us and dropping your wisdom here. I know that the listeners will get a lot from this.
Thank you.
Hi. I miss you. It's Autumn again. Thanks for listening to our show. You can make a sustaining donation to our work by visiting our page at patreon.com/endoftheworldshow. You can also find us on Instagram at endoftheworldpc. How to Survive the End of the World is produced and edited by the incomparable Zach Rosen. Music for our show comes from Tunde Olaniran, Mother Cyborg, and the Bengtsons. Talk to you soon. Shake me, don't shake me.